Elizabeth Meyer, and I'm sitting and talking with Selma Danicky on June 23rd, 1999, in the Jefferson Room of the Oregon Historical Society. And Selma, you were just telling me about the friends that you made after college.
Well, Sue Grout had been a friend a little bit previous to my finishing college. Although we never went to school together, she had gone to Lincoln, to high school, to Vassar for, oh, to Wellesley, I'm sorry, for 2 years of college, and then finished at the University of Washington. But the art museum needed an assistant in the library, in the art library, and Sue was perfect for the job. So she came to work at the art museum, and then she would take my place at the information desk when I went out for lunch. That's what we did for the last couple of years that I was at the art museum. And she became Sue Chilton because she got married during that period of time to a man whom she had met while she was at the University of Washington, who was in the Marine Corps, who was an officer in the Marines. And in fact, the wedding was one that I participated in at her house in about 1944. And she has remained one of my closest friends ever since. And she and her husband. And also, of course, my friend Claire Smith, whom I had mentioned earlier, who was my very good friend, and who by this time had finished Reed College, where she had gone to school, and was working in her father's law firm office downtown. And so, of course, I still saw a great deal of her. And then Peggy O'Brien, who became Peggy Lucas, also during that latter couple of years of working at the art museum, when she married Johnny Lucas, whom she had known in the East and who, as I mentioned, had graduated from West Point and whose first post of duty was Camp Adair. So those two, and then T.D., actually Mary Lee, but never known by that name, T.D. Fry, who became T.D. Snell during that period of time, also having graduated from the University of Washington and having been a sorority sister of Sue Grout's. And that's how I got to know T.D., and she also became one of my very best friends. And unfortunately, she has died, but her husband, her former husband, is still a very good friend of mine. And let's see, who else? Well, there were just myriads of people around at that time.
Right. Sounds like you had a very broad, cast a very broad net when you were gathering your friends.
I did, and probably always have.
That's neat. Do you remember the very first time you met Arno and what your impression was?
I certainly do. We met at the apartment that Peggy and Johnny Lucas had. That is when he was here in Portland. Most of the time he was at Camp Adair, which was in the old Stelwyn apartments, which have burned now and have been replaced by another apartment building on West Burnside, almost directly across from the Ringside Restaurant. And they had an apartment up on the fourth floor, which overlooked West Burnside. And they had long talked about bringing this Arno Denneke, whom they had met at Camp Adair, to be a blind date for me, and which finally, in May of 1944, we met in May of 1944 at Peggy and Johnny Lucas's apartment in the Stelwyn Apartments, which was an old apartment house building on West Burnside, which has subsequently burned and been replaced by another apartment house almost directly across from the Ringside Restaurant. And their apartment was on the fourth floor, which was the top floor of the Stelwyn, and it looked north, and it was a great big room one room, living room, dining room, bedroom combined kind of thing. And Peggy and Johnny and T.D. and Bill Snell and Arno and I all met and had dinner there and had a wonderful time. We all just hit it off together very well. Well, of course, they were all old friends of mine except for Arno, but he fit in as he always had the ability to do, just beautifully. And immediately was a good friend of everybody there. And I think that was a Friday night, and I think that maybe we went to Jansen Beach the following night. I'm not sure about that. But then in the first weekend of June was Bill Snell's birthday, and we were invited to brunch up at his and T.D.'s apartment, which was up at Sylvan, and we did that. And there were three weekends in May and June of 44 in which we were together. Now this just sounds utterly ridiculous. It's the kind of thing that nobody should do, is to base a marriage on being together three weekends and 1 week spread out over half a year's worth of time. But that's the way it was because of the war. And by the summer of 44, Arno and his division were being sent back to Missouri, and he went to Missouri, and then in November of 44, took his last leave of absence and flew from the Army and flew out to Portland to spend Thanksgiving week with me. And then from there, he was sent to Boston, which was port of embarkation for Europe, this being really the end of the war, or almost the end of the war. Mm-hmm. Of course, the end didn't come until 1945. But he was sent to Boston, where by the end of this week in November that we were together here, we talked about not wanting to lose track of each other and that we would certainly see each other again, but didn't get to a serious discussion about marriage until he had returned to Missouri. And he called me on the phone and said, what would I like an engagement ring to look like? Well, I remember very well, I was at the home of the woman who was then secretary to Bob Davis at the Art Museum, who herself had just got married. And I was at their house for dinner, and I guess my father Trent had the call forwarded to where I was. And I remember sitting there and saying, well, I'd like, and saying that I would like a simple single diamond set in gold. And because he was going to Boston, I could put him in touch with Jenny Nelson, who was one of my good college friends. And she took him to a jewelry store in Boston, and he bought the ring in December and sent it to me in January, just before he went overseas.
It sounds like you took this pretty well. You weren't in shock that he
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I guess it's just my nature to just sort of approach things in a very matter-of-fact way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did you get married?
We were married in October of 1945, as soon as Arno got back from overseas. Now, as I mentioned, he had wanted very much to be sent overseas much earlier than he was, because he felt he was missing the war. And it's maybe hard for you to understand, but a lot of people in those days felt that they, that is, servicemen, felt that they wanted to be involved in the war. They wanted to be where the action was. And the Army kept keeping him as an instructor in artillery because he was very good as an instructor. And finally, when he was sent to Camp Adair, he became part of a division which was bound for overseas, the 70th Division, which was Oregon organized and not called the Trailblazer Division, having nothing to do with the basketball team because it much preceded the basketball team. Anyway, I can't remember what I was going to say. So finally, he was sent overseas in January of 1945, sailing from Boston directly to Marseille, and then landing and the division moving up the Rhone River Valley till they got to what was the Saar Basin, where they actually went into combat. But even marching up the Rhone River Valley, it was winter and it was miserable conditions, weather conditions. And there were German planes in the area that did fly over, and it was no fun, and they were really in the in the war. But they actually went into combat when they were up in the Saar Basin, S-A-A-R Basin, between France and Germany. And that is where they were in real combat. But that combat, as you can see, did not last very long because the war was coming to an end, and the war, of course, was over May 7th or 8th of 1945. And by that time, Arno had survived well, as most people in his division had, not all. And he'd had what I suppose would have been a minimal amount of combat. But nevertheless, he was actually in a combative situation with the war. And then he was kept during that summer still overseas, as most people were who were there. And he had a marvelous summer. He managed the baseball team for the division. And it was all kind of fun, and they had a really good time from May until October. And then when he was sent home, it was with the thought that we would still be fighting the Japanese. But of course, in the meantime, the atomic bomb had been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that really put an end to the war. So that when we were married within a few days after he had arrived from overseas, because that's what he wanted to do. And his parents and his sister came out to Portland. They came, of course, by train, and thought they'd come to the end of the world because they were used to Illinois, and they couldn't imagine that it took 3 nights and 2 days to get out to Portland, and where in the world were they going? Mm-hmm. And they arrived a couple of days before he arrived. And then it was literally less than a week after that that we were married. However, he had been in touch with me by telegram, because that's how you did things in those days. And his telegram, which was sent in September, said, "Get Trinity," that is Trinity Episcopal Church, "get Trinity ready, I'm coming." And so I did indeed, and went and bought a wedding dress and chose bridesmaids' dresses for my bridesmaids, and got and secured the university club for the reception and got everything organized. So that by the time he got here, it was all ready to go.
So you had your courtship by telegram.
Well, you might say that, yeah. You might say that.
Did he, do you feel like talking about any other kinds of things that he did before you got married that made you feel like this is a romantic person?
Well, this is funny that you should ask that. The Oxford Book of Poetry, English verse, what is it? I can't remember now. Anyway, it includes a whole lot of poems, but one of them was, "I have been faithful to thee, Sinara, in my way," and I remember his reading that to me, and I, you know, I, he never read any poetry to me after that. And that was not like him at all to have read any poetry at all, but he did at that point, which is really kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because Arno was a very practical, sort of down-to-earth kind of person, and not given to flights of fancy, nor poetry, nor anything romantic. Oh, one, back in February of 45, after I had received the ring, and we were formally engaged, as one did in those days, I, of course, was going to have a tea to announce this to my various girlfriends. And Peggy, who had been with Johnny, her husband, and he also had gone overseas, though with a different division by that time, Peggy had come back to work at the art museum. And I decided that the time to have the tea would be in February, as close to Valentine's Day as we could get it. And so Arno wired me some flowers. Now, he was overseas, and I don't know how he accomplished that, but anyway, he wired me some flowers, which were supposed to have been red roses, but they turned out to be red tulips. Well, I much prefer tulips to roses. So I was very happy with that. And then it turned out that we couldn't have it on that day for some reason that it had to do with something here, which I can't now remember. But I do know that Arno said that that night overseas where he was in France, he instructed the, because he was in Fire Direction Center for the artillery, in other words, in the headquarters of it, he instructed a night barrage that was just a humdinger of a barrage against the Germans, and that was all to celebrate our engagement. So that's kind of neat to think about. Germans didn't know what was going on.
That's amazing.
And I should add, talking of this short period of time that we were together before we were married, I was 25 and Arno was 28, so we weren't kids. And the other thing is that I didn't mention was that when I left the art museum the beginning of July of 1945, I left to go back to Illinois to visit Arno's parents and his sister in Rock Island, and took the train and went back there and spent a month, had a wonderful time. I enjoyed his parents, and I particularly enjoyed his sister, who is still one of my best friends, and she lives here now and has for many, many, many years. And so that in visiting his parents, even though he wasn't there, and meeting some friends of his who were not in the service, I got to know him better than probably maybe than I would have under any other circumstances, because I was living in his family's house.
How typical might that have been in those days? It sounds like a
very typical. Wow. Very typical, I would say, because
really
a lot of my girlfriends and acquaintances were married during that period of time, or even before that, during the earlier part of the war, usually to people, or not always, but sometimes to people whom they didn't know very well, and were married under circumstances very similar to that. In fact, thinking of the wedding itself, I mentioned that I had selected bridesmaids' dresses for my bridesmaids, of whom there were three. Well, and Arno's sister, who was of college age and came out, of course, to be in the wedding as well. I also had to line up as ushers for the wedding some fellows whom I knew who were already back from the service, because Arno didn't know any fellows his age here. His father was his best man. But for ushers, it had to be friends, people that I had known. So that was rather typical. And Arno was married in his uniform, his officer's uniform, and looking very elegant, I thought. And that's another thing. I never saw him in civilian clothes till after we were married.
Wow.
Because he had nothing but uniforms of various kinds.
Now, this might be a different type of military wedding, but did they have to go under the cross?
Oh, no, no, no. Nothing like that. That's really West Point or Annapolis.
Okay. what kind of reactions did your families have to your impending marriage?
Oh, well, my father just thought, I mean, when he got to know Arno, which he did rather briefly, but during the period of time that Arno visited the three weekends, and particularly the Thanksgiving week, where he stayed at my house, my father got to know him well and liked him very much, very much. They got along just beautifully.
And I guess you already said that you got along with his family. So
oh, yes, yes.
Everything looked like it was going smoothly.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
What was his, sort of out of the blue question here, but what was his sense of humor like?
Oh, he had a good sense of humor. He had a good sense of humor. He liked funny jokes. I thought they were rather corny jokes, and as the years went on, I thought they were more corny. Yes, he had a good sense of humor. He was a very outgoing person who met people easily and chatted with them easily and all that kind of thing. We, laughingly, his children and I have always said that he was very typically a Middle Westerner, very much so, a church-going. His parents had been Methodists, although originally they had been Lutherans, but they even found, and they were much more conservative than we, found that the Lutheran church was too conservative for their tastes, and they became Methodists. But I was an Episcopalian, and so Arno became an Episcopalian the first year that we were married, when we lived in Eugene, where Arno taught law at the University of Oregon Law School from January 1st of 46 until Christmas vacation of 46. And we lived in Eugene. And it was a good beginning for him to get back into the field of law, which he'd been away from for 4 years while he was in the service, and to, in the process of teaching, he could bring home to me every night that what he was refreshing his own mind with by being a professor. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did.
I do have questions about that. I was just wondering, before we left this area, if you would like to tell me anything more about your wedding, the wedding ceremony, how it went.
It was performed by Bishop Dagwell of the Episcopal Church at that time, Bishop Benjamin Dagwell, who was one of the sweetest people that ever was, a very short little guy who was just wonderful, very warm. And it was a Trinity, which, if you've ever been to it, is a very large church. And I still, you know, I think of myself going down the aisle in that huge church. It was in the late afternoon, and then the reception followed at the University Club, which also was rather typical of the times. And it was just a neat reception where all of my family's friends and my friends were, and then we left from there to drive to Gearhart, where my friend Claire Smith's family's beach house was, and which we were using for our honeymoon. And we went down to Gearhart. It was, of course, dark by then, being October, and also the Sunset Highway was not completed by that time, so that the part from Portland out to Gales Creek and Timber was a series of country roads that went at right angles like this, following farm borders. And then only beyond that was the Sunset Highway itself completed. So it was pretty late when we got to Gerhardt. And then, and for many years thereafter, the Oregon Bar Convention was held at Gerhardt. And they were wonderful conventions because they were fun. And friends of ours owned the Gerhardt Hotel at the time, very good friends, Elaine and John Osborne. And we got there late and were hungry. And so we went right to their apartment, which had joined the hotel. And John went over to the kitchen and pulled a couple of dinners out of the kitchen that were for the bar convention. How auspicious that was. And brought them over to us, and we ate dinner and talked with them, and then went to the house, which was back in the meadow. The Smith's house was back in the meadow behind the golf course. So that was where we spent our honeymoon. And we spent a couple of weeks down there, and then, or maybe it was 10 days. And then we came to Portland and spent another week in Portland. And then we went by train to California, to San Francisco, to catch up with a very good Army friend of Arno's, who Don Boyd, whom we was a good friend then for many years thereafter. And then we took a train from San Francisco to Rock Island, where we spent Thanksgiving with Arno's parents and spent about a week there and were able to buy a secondhand car and set off for Fort Sill, where Arno was to report in for duty, not being sure what that duty might be, whether it would be occupying the Japanese country or what. But instead of which, when he arrived at Fort Sill and they looked at his records, they said, "You've been in the Army 4 years, over 4 years, and we're through with you." So he was, as the term was used, separated from the Army at Fort Sill. We had a week there in which I met a lot of his old Army friends who likewise were there for the same reason. And again, it was just party, party, party all the time. And it was fun. And then we left from Fort Sill and drove to Fort Sam Houston, Texas, which is San Antonio. And there, Peggy and Johnny Lucas were with his father, who was a general and who was stationed there. And we spent several nights with them in San Antonio at Fort Sam Houston. And then from there, we drove west and spent several nights with T.D. and Bill Snell. He was in the Navy, and they were in San Diego. And so we did that. And then, so we didn't get home until just before Christmas of 1945, having had a marvelous time, as you can see.
Sounds like marvelous.
It was. It was great. Now, don't tell me we were disconnected. I hope we were not.
We're fine.
Good.
I know I asked this question already, but just to make sure, was there any other thing you'd like to tell me about the wedding or the people that participated in it? Or?
No, I don't think so. It was just a great wedding reception, just as I say, over in the University Club in the corner room, which is on the lower level. And
no strange mishaps.
No, nothing like that.
Smoothly.
Yeah.
Okay, great. After you married, you lived in Eugene.
Mm-hmm. For the first year.
And
including the summer, because they ran law school during the summer, because there were so many guys who'd been in the service who wanted to finish law school. And their law school had been interrupted, and they were in a hurry to finish up. So they ran it during the summer, which usually they wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. What was your first impression of Eugene as a place to live?
It was okay. I had never spent any amount of time there. I'd barely been there and didn't go to school there. So it was kind of fun. I never was wildly enthusiastic about Eugene and never wanted to live there. And as Arno's year of teaching progressed, he came to the conclusion that what he wanted to do was practice law in Portland. And therefore, he was not going to be teaching beyond Christmas of 46. And so he was in touch with some law firms here in Portland, one of which, of course, hired him. And I think, well, again, it was a friend of my father's who was one of the men in that